You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts.
Everybody, and welcome to the Paranormal Portal Podcast. I'm your host, Brent Thomas. Thank you all for being here with me. I really appreciate all the love and support we keep getting from all of y'all out there and all of you who are spreading the word about the portal to other people. It's just been amazing, and we owe it all to you guys. And if you have a story of your very own and you'd like to be a guest on the show to share what you've been through, I'd love to hear from you. So please email me at paranormalportalradio@gmail.com. We can have a chat and get you on the show. It'd be great to hear your stories. It's always the highlight of me doing the show is to hear all these new and interesting experiences everybody's is having. So today I got a great show lined up for you guys. We've got a special guest with us today. Diana from Oregon is on the show with me, and she's going to be talking about her incredible experiences through a whole span of life. And it's just a great an amazing collection of experiences. So I guess we'll just get right into it. Welcome to the show, Diana.
Thank you, Brent.
How are you doing? I'm doing good. I'm really excited to get into this. Now, you emailed me quite a laundry list of what you've seen and experienced, and I got to tell you, I was like, oh, my God. You've been through a lot.
Yeah, I've always loved the paranormal, and I've been blessed to have quite a few experiences.
Yeah, you really have, and a diverse array of them as well, and I see that often. It's like, I don't know what it is, and maybe you can disagree or agree with this, but doesn't it seem like when you hear of people having experiences, there's not a lot of people that just have one thing go on. It's like, once you've seen one thing, then all of a sudden you'll see many more things, or it seems to be that way anyway.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem that way.
Well, I guess it's like a seal. Once you break the seal, then you're able to perceive it better, or you're more exposed to it, or maybe it's an energy. I don't know what it is, but it's definitely a phenomenon that I see repeating over and over with experiencers, is that generally, not all the time, but generally there's, you know, people, if they've experienced one thing, are much more likely, it seems, to experience more things. But for you, in your journey, where did this... Did it start with experiences, or did it start with an interest in the paranormal?
Well, my earliest experience was I lived in Queens in the second-story apartment, and the first story, the people had a collie, and I loved animals, and I didn't have one of my own at that point, so I'd go downstairs, you know, at times and play with their dog. And I was sitting in the kitchen with my mother and my grandmother, who I lived with, and I saw the collie in the kitchen walk across and right through the stove. And the dog thankfully wasn't dead. It wasn't a ghost, but I imagine it was the dog astral projecting.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and I was freaking out, you know, and telling my mom and grandma, you know, oh, there's Beauty. That was the dog's name. You know, it's like, is she dead? Is she dead? You know, I see Beauty. And, you know, then they said, no, you know, you didn't see anything and that type of thing. No, she's not dead, you know, and, it, you know, she really wasn't. But
no, I have a question.
I went downstairs to see.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
Did they have other collies prior to this one?
No.
Okay. Well, then you're probably right. It just is, you know, that's not something I can say that I've heard, but that's an interesting idea that an astral projecting animal as well. Very cool. That's a very unique experience.
Yeah, it was. And of course, I was raised on the old Dracula, Frankenstein, Mummy, Wolfman. I loved all those movies as a kid.
Me too. And those were the golden age.
Ghost.
Yep.
And thankfully, my family would let me, you know, watch them. They say, oh, it'll give you nightmares. You know, it's like, but please let me watch. I won't have a nightmare. And of course, I always did. But, you know, it didn't stop my love of all things weird.
No, that's really
and,
cool.
I'm going to say it probably runs in my family somewhat because when I was about 9 years old, my grandmother had told me a story about my grandfather. And I never met this grandfather. I only met my step-grandfather because this one had passed away before I was ever born. But he apparently worked with magic, like ceremonial-type magic.
Oh, wow.
And he would contact a spirit, a particular spirit, through a Ouija board.
Okay.
And the spirit would help him out with different things. And, you know, my grandmother said, you know, you'd help him out, you know, just with a lot of different things. And one time, it was during the Depression era, and their alarm clock broke. And, you know, he wouldn't wake up early enough on his own, so he had the spirit help wake him up so he would be on time for work. And she said it was a little unnerving because what the spirit would do was like, it was like a fist punching up under the mattress. So it would kind of punch and lift up the mattress a little bit in that spot.
Uh-huh.
To wake up my grandfather.
Oh, wow.
And she kind of took it in stride, you know, but she said that was a little unnerving. But all the other stuff, you know, it's like, oh, it's okay. So, but at some point, there was this religious group that's kind of an offshoot of Jehovah's Witnesses, and they had managed to convert him, and their belief was that, you know, anything like that is automatically demonic. So my grandmother said that he had, you know, gone in the room with his Ouija board and, you know, was telling his Ouija board that, you know, he wasn't going to speak to that spirit anymore because he realizes that it wasn't what he thought it was, that it's really demonic, and that he wanted it gone. And she said the Ouija board flew up in the air and crashed against the wall and broke.
Oh, my God. Wow.
And I was like, I can totally understand that. It's not that it's demonic that it did that, in my opinion. It's that, okay, here I, you know, from the spirit's point of view, here I am helping you out all this time, and now you're going to do this to me and just say I'm something else, and, you know.
Right.
That'd be just too, basically. And I see it as it broke it, so it's like, yeah, don't call me again, you know. Don't let the door hit you on the, you know.
That's the spiritual equivalent of slamming the phone down.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, that's wild. Okay.
Okay, when I was probably around 10, my grandmother passed away, and my mother had already passed away when I was like 7.
Oh,
so
okay.
It was just me and my grandmother, and then she passed away, so I got sent to New York to live with an aunt and uncle and a cousin. And they lived on the third floor of an apartment building, and, you know, when you go into, like, the hallway where the stairs go up, you know, there's the under part of the stairs on the back that's all open.
Okay.
And it just kind of has a creepy vibe to it, you know, it's almost like a basement vibe, you know, right. But it's just like, you know, dark and dingy and, you know, a place you don't know somebody would be hiding. But just to pull my leg, she would always tell me there was a severed hand under there that would come get us. And then we'd go racing up the stairs, kind of like the lava floor thing, you know, when you're a kid, you know, you jump on the furniture, not right. step in the lava.
Yeah.
But I was never sure if there was a hand there at one point or not. It wasn't the best neighborhood. But this was a game that we would play with each other just about every time we entered the building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I'd tell her, you know, oh, the hand's going to get us, you know, we better hurry up, you know. And one day, and we've been doing this for months, and one day we were in the back, you had to go through the living room, like, to get to the bedroom area where our bedrooms were.
Uh-huh.
And we were back there playing with Barbies or something or other, and we heard this scratching sound on the floor.
Uh-huh.
And it was just like a scratch and stop and scratch and stop. And we were both looking at each other like, what in the world is that? Because we were the only ones home. Both my aunt and uncle were still at work.
Uh-huh.
And we were like, oh, no, it's the hand. That's the first thing that came to mind. So we were both too scared to look.
Right.
And we started singing just, you know, stupid kid songs, whatever we come up with, real loud to try and drown out the sound of the scratch, you know, because it was really freaking us out. And when my aunt came home, she came home first. We had finally, you know, gone in the living room. We were looking around on the floor, and it was a hardwood floor.
Uh-huh.
And there were some scratch marks and a little bit of what looked like blood.
Oh, no.
Going, like, from the front door through the living room, like, headed our way.
Oh, that's horrible.
So, I really think we managed to create a tulpa out of our
sure.
game of, you know, the severed hand thing. And it was funny because my aunt was like, what's this stuff on the floor? And, you know, what were you girls doing? I was like, nothing. We don't know. Nothing. What's
that? And ladies and gentlemen, a tulpa is a thought form basically that's manifest through belief in it. To paraphrase it really, really simply, just in case any of you out there are wondering, what's a tulpa? That's what it is.
Thank you. I forgot to explain that.
No, that's okay.
Anyway, after that incident, we stopped doing that little game because we didn't want to experience it anymore.
Yeah, that's one you only need once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then probably around 1969, I was still living in the same place with them. And my bedroom, you know, since they already had the apartment, it wasn't really designed for, you know, extra bedroom for me. They had walled, in a bigger room, they had walled off with, like, a little bookshelf, a part to put my bed and my little desk and stuff, okay. You know, to kind of make a mini bedroom within a room.
Sure.
So to go to the restroom, I would have to go, you know, around my bookcase into the main room and, you know, then go to the living room and... the restroom was beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And one night I got up, because I had a tinkle, and went around my little bookcase, and there was a wall of green light.
Ooh.
That took up most of that room.
Wow.
It was about 3 inches thick and stretched from floor to ceiling and was maybe 7 or 8 feet wide. And there was maybe a little 1.5, 2 foot area where I could squeeze by it. I was scared to walk through it. And you know how when you have sunlight come through the window, you can see the little particles of dust,
sure.
you know, moving in the air?
Yeah.
It had that effect to it. It was like just, it was movement in it, although it was like an almost neon green light. And I don't know what it was.
That's incredible.
All these years later, I cannot figure out what that was.
Wow, that's intense.
It was weird.
Yeah, that's pretty intense.
Yeah, and at the time I thought, oh, this is aliens, but I really don't know what it was.
Sure.
You know, it wasn't coming from outside. It wasn't coming from the window because, for one, there was nothing like that. It was just residences, but we also had the blinds pulled down, you know, because...
Sure, right.
You know, if the pajamas walking through there, you know, you're not going to be,
yeah,
you know, having the windows wide open in the night. So, yeah, I don't know what that was, but it was just a wall of almost a neon green.
Oh, geez.
With movement in it, like the dust particles moving all around in it. I'm just saying, when I came back, it was gone.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, who would just take a chance? Let me just run through this and see what happens. Yeah, I think you made the right call.
And then, let's see, I was probably around 12 at that time. And then when I was 14, we had moved to a house. I was still living with them, but we had moved to a house where I actually had my own bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And one night when I woke up, my mother was standing there. And I think she's the reason why I woke up. And my mother was standing there near the bed. And, you know, and I sat up and I'm like, you know, Mom? You know, and she just said, it won't happen to you. And I was like, what won't happen to me? And she says, it won't happen to you again, and then faded out. And I just sat there, you know, like, mm-hmm. Oh, my God, you know, I just saw my mother. And I even went downstairs to go get a drink of water after that because, you know, I was so, you know, surprised and partly excited, you know, because I got to see her again. And, you know, it never happened again, but,
wow,
you know, that's the only apparition I've ever seen.
Was that immediately following that green wall of light?
No, this was like 2 years later.
Oh, okay.
In a different house.
So you don't...
Yeah, the green wall of light was in the apartment that we lived in.
Okay.
And then the other the apparition happened in a two-story house that they found that they were renting.
But you never did sort out what will never happen to you again?
No, I was... well, she said, it won't happen to you. And the only thing I could ever figure out was cancer because she died of cancer.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know that that's what she meant, but...
Sure.
You know, that's just my best guess, you know.
Right.
I just don't really know.
Yeah. That is a real special experience, though, to have that, even if it's just a sighting, a glimpse of you know, someone you love that's, you know, has passed on. That must have been really powerful.
Yeah, it was.
Wow.
Next, we're going to where I was about a year later, and... me and my cousin were both grounded. We had done something or other. And we were to, you know, go straight home from school and not go out. And we did. That's exactly what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle came home one day all angry at me and yelling at me and saying how dare I talk to him that way. And, ooh, you know, I'm supposed to be grounded. And what am I doing out? And when the story finally came out, he says on his way home, he saw me, told me to get home, that I was grounded. I basically told him to F off.
Wow.
And took off in the opposite direction. And he looked confused when he saw me home, you know, when he got home.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, if I ran off in the opposite direction, I should not have been able to beat him home for one.
Right.
But he, you know, I lived with them for years, and I've known them all my life. You know, he's going to know it's me. He's not going to mix me up with some stranger,
right,
you know.
Uh-huh.
But I got in trouble for that. My grounding got extended.
Wow.
Of what I can only say is a doppelganger that he saw.
That's really...
Of me, you know.
That's really... wow, that's like a terrible setup.
I know, and then my cousin was defending me, and I was saying, no, she's been here with me the whole time. And he's like, you're just standing up for her because, you know, you guys are best friends and blah, blah, blah. But it was like, no, for real.
Oh,
I was home the whole time. I don't know what he saw, but it wasn't me.
Oh, that is wild. Okay. That's intense.
And then about 5 years later, I was living on my own, and... I was in Georgia, and I was living in an apartment that was up on a hilltop, and I apparently astral-projected because it's like I knew I was asleep, but I knew the lights had gone out, and our vents for the air conditioning in the summertime, and the air conditioning vents were the kind that are up near the ceiling, and I remember taking a close look at it, and then I floated up through the ceiling, and it was a blue sky with white cotton ball-type clouds, and I noticed as I was turning around, I saw that there was a telephone pole with a car that had hit it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the lights were out. I zapped back into my body and woke up for real. And the lights really were out. And I was a smoker at the time. And I only had like one cigarette left. So I was like, well, I'm going to, you know, go get a pack of cigarettes. And when I went down the hill, I saw the same car with a telephone pole. And it's like, okay, I know this is for real. I really astraled. This is not a dream, you know?
Wow. Yeah.
And something I noticed, though, while I was in the astral, was everything in the room almost looked like it was made of light in addition to the physical.
Oh.
You know how a computer screen shows things like with light instead of just dull?
Yep.
It's that kind of effect.
Oh.
That was something that I had noticed while I was out of body, was everything looked prettier and brighter and more vibrant, and like it was almost glowing, but not quite.
I've heard that from a lot of people that talk about astral projecting, is the world, or their perception of the world is so much more vivid, and everything mm-hmm. is much more alive and bright, and I find that absolutely incredible and wonderful. And I suppose, I mean, just trying to understand it from, you know, a logical point of view, it must be because it's not being filtered through all of our physical apparatus. And, you know, so it's experiencing it directly in a more pure way.
Yeah, I agree.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I've tried to do it again on purpose many times, but I haven't made it yet.
Oh, yeah, it's a real practice start. Well, it's cool that you at least experienced one. Yeah, I mean, to have even that one experience, I think it is possible to train into it, but I think those spontaneous ones are so powerful because you're not really ready for it, but, you know, it just seems to be so much more explosive that way. I guess the good thing is that if you train for it, you kind of already know what to expect. So it would probably be a more powerful experience for you, because you wouldn't be doing all the second guessing and stuff that I think most people do when they do that.
Okay, everybody, I think it's time we got to take a break, so don't go away, and we'll be right back with more of the Paranormal Portal podcast in just a couple minutes. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here of the Paranormal Portal podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal, and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. Everybody, and we're back at it here on the Paranormal Portal podcast. Buckle up, we're going in.
All right, so where are we going next?
Okay, next was the same apartment, and I came home one day and I heard things crashing around upstairs. And I was like, oh no, somebody broke in, you know, and it's like, I'm not going in there. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not going upstairs. So I, you know, slipped out the front door, and actually, no, I called the police, and then I stepped out the front door. I tried to quietly do it from the living room, and then I stepped back outside. Mm-hmm. And when the police got there, and there was no other way out, the only door was the front door, there was no back door, they went up and checked, and they said, there is nobody here.
Wow.
And when we went up there, there was nothing out of place. It sounded like, you know, somebody was, like, turning over furniture or something, you know, just crash, bang, boom. It's like, ooh, what is going on? Somebody must have broken in, you know?
Right.
And
sounds like
there was nothing.
It sounded like they were tossing your whole place up. Now, that one you hear a lot, too, and I think the most common version of that is people hearing dishes getting crashed in the kitchen, and, you know, it sounds like things are getting smashed and thrown everywhere, and then they turn the corner to go in there and see what the hell's going on, and there's absolutely nothing going on. And I find that incredible. Now, I did hear someone offer an explanation for that I think is kind of cool. And what they suggested is perhaps it's a sound that the more spiritual people can pick up, but it's actually happening in the other realm, the astral realm or something, and it's not actually a physical event. And I thought, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, because I did have the kitchen noises happen another time.
Wow, okay.
I thought my room, I had a roommate back at that point, and I thought he had come home and was crash, bang, boom, and I was back in the bedroom talking to a friend on the phone. We were talking about ghosts, and I was saying how I'm not afraid of ghosts, you know? And then I hear pots and pans crashing in the kitchen. Oh. I was like, oh, my roommate must have come home, and he must have had a bad day, because why is he slinging all that stuff? And, I went in there to see, and there was nothing there. Everything was in place, and he wasn't home yet either. So just like you were saying, yeah, the kitchen sounds.
Did you get nervous then after that, when you realized everything was fine?
Yeah, I said, okay, guys, I take it back. Yeah, I might be a little proud of you.
I was gonna say, it's like, and then the universe answered.
Yeah.
Wow, that's powerful. Very powerful. You know, there's that old saying, you never challenge the ghosts, you know, you never put that out there. And so, yeah, I think this is a great example of that. It's like, really, you're not afraid, huh? Oh, check this out.
I know, that's what I felt like it was. And then along the way, after that stuff, I had gotten married, and my husband had a kung fu school.
Oh, wow.
And back then, you know, disco was the rage, and me and my friend, we went to practice our disco dancing, and what better place than his kung fu school, because, you know, it's got mirrors along the wall, you know, so people can, you mm-hmm. know, check out their kung fu moves and stuff, and it's like, oh, this will be perfect. So I asked him, you know, me and my friend could use it to practice the hustle or whatever, and he said, yeah, but make sure you bow to the altar. He was Chinese. Uh-huh. And he said, make sure you bow to the altar, because he had an altar of the kung fu gods there, and before you leave.
Oh.
So we started leaving, but we didn't bow. And then the big kicking bag he has started swinging.
Ooh.
And the air felt heavy. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, I get the message. And then we bowed and scurried out of there. And then that same husband and his friends had gotten involved in a possession type thing, a deliberate possession type thing.
Uh-oh.
And yeah. When they're possessed, they can't be cut with a blade. I don't know if they can be shot or not, but he says they can't be cut by a blade. And they can do incredible healing.
Wow.
And when he would do this, he and some of his male friends did it. Women aren't allowed to know a whole lot about it.
Okay.
But they would put their head down and stomp three times, and then you could feel the air around the room, you know, start getting real heavy. Mm-hmm. And the feeling was terrifying. And I don't know if I felt terrified because of the power in the air, mm-hmm. or if it was because it was actually a negative feeling. You know, I can't discern why I felt the way I felt about it, but it would terrify me when they do it, and I'd get as far away as I could.
Right, yeah.
Except one time, one of them challenged me to stay there and not go anywhere, and I was like, oh, crap. And I kept telling myself, nothing to fear but fear itself. And he'd have his head down, he was breathing real weird, and this is one of my husband's friends that was doing that one, that it challenged me to stay there. And when I would look at him, he'd start lifting his head. But if I looked away, it's like his head would go back down. Because when I'd look again, his head was down, but then he's like, he knew just at the turn of my head. And he'd be breathing really strangely.
Uh-huh.
To me, it sounded like it wasn't even like a human breath.
Sure.
It was weird. But at that time, me and my husband were both working at a Chinese restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the cooks had cut his hand open really bad. And everybody and the guy's wife is screaming in the kitchen. They're all yelling, you know, call 911, you know, you've got to get him to a hospital right now, you know, he's losing too much blood. And my husband went back there and did his thing with the possession real fast and put his hand over that cook's hand. And maybe 5 minutes. And when he took his hand away, it was no longer the long length of cut. You know, mm-hmm. it was like shorter in length. And it looked like a scratch instead of something that needed stitches. And originally it looked like it was going to need quite a few stitches.
Oh, my gosh.
But he just about healed it entirely where the guy didn't have to go to the hospital anymore.
Oh, man.
You know, just slap a Band-Aid on it, you know, just to not get right. it. You know, infected. And that was it. And then I had seen him heal somebody's muscle another time. One of his students was did something and pulled the muscle in his arm,
uh-huh.
and he got possessed and laid his hands on that student, and the student was able afterwards move his arm around without pain, and
well, that's
he said it
cool.
was fixed.
That's wonderful. I guess that's a good thing,
yeah.
but it's still, well, you got to wonder about the ramifications of using an ability like that. So are you really letting in some other consciousness, or is it perhaps opening up your own potential through this exercise? And that's the part that's kind of scary. It's hard to know.
Yeah, it is hard to know. I know that he would have to be celibate at certain times of the year. He only did it like 1 year because he didn't like all the strict things he had to keep up with.
Sure.
And like he couldn't have milk at other times or red meat at other times. You know, there were certain protocols and taboos that he had to follow in order to do that.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, he had stopped doing it because of that, but I looked it up online, you know, out of curiosity
mm-hmm.
once, and I found it under Rituals of the Red Spear.
Oh.
And apparently to make their skin like iron, they had to make a Chinese sigil of sorts or something, and then burn it and swallow it or something like that. It was something that, you know, I had not been privy to before, because like I said, it was, you know, only for the guys, you know, women aren't supposed to know much about it, or
right, yeah, exactly,
you know,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's the process type of thing. I did know that in order for the initiation into it, that they would have a sword swung at them, you know, against their stomach.
Oh. Wow.
So
okay.
They'd get cut if they lost faith or did it wrong or whatever.
Oof.
But if they did it right, then they wouldn't get cut. And let's see, next is probably when I was working at a life insurance company, people were saying that the place was haunted, you know, when I got there. I didn't even have to bring it up, even though I love the paranormal. And they were saying, oh, be careful, there's ghosts here, and blah, blah, blah. And snakes fell down from the elevator, and this place was built on a cemetery that they only moved the grave markers, but they didn't move the graves. And,
oh, no.
you know, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I wasn't sure to believe it or not, but I had hope, you know. I was like, ooh, cool. This is true. You know? Except for the graves part. It's like, you know, I feel like the graves should have had the respect to be moved, but
sure,
not put under a big business building. But
right.
At any rate, one of the, it happened more than once. In the office, you know, coffee's like a mainstream. So first thing in the morning, you know, they put on a pot of coffee so that way people could have coffee, and we'd get the water out of the restroom. And the person that was making the coffee didn't want to do it anymore because she was scared. So, you know, I went to make the coffee, and then I found out why she was scared. You can turn off the water, and sometimes the water faucet would turn right back on as you're, you know, you have your hand on the door and the other hand's on the coffee pot to go out. And the faucet would turn on full force all by itself.
Oh, wow.
And I thought it was cool. Except that, you know, it's like, okay, quit doing this. I can get out the door because, you know, I have work to do. But, yeah, I had enjoyed that. That was neat.
Yeah. I mean, those kind of experiences are really cool. I just wonder if again, I think in situations with presences like that, oftentimes they just want to be acknowledged. And once they're acknowledged, they'll quit doing the mischievous stuff, in many cases, I believe. But did you have a discussion like that? Did you say, please stop this, and then it did? Or?
Well, I would turn it off again real quick and say, okay, I gotta go, you know, just dash out.
Okay.
It happened several times to me. I don't remember now, you know, exactly how often, but, you know, sure, more than once where it would do it. And, you know, I'm the kind of person, you know, I take this stuff in stride, and, you know, I laugh about it because I think it's the spirits playing pranks, just saying, hey, I'm here, you know. I don't take it as like, ooh, it's evil and out to kill me or whatever.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I agree completely. I think people generally, you know, there's some people that anything that happens and they're just positive, it has to be evil. But I just think it's, you know, there's just people around that don't have a body anymore, or maybe they never did, but they just want to be acknowledged or respected a little bit, you know. So I think that goes a long way in dealing with a lot of that.
Yeah. Well, now I think there's a spirit in the bathroom too, but this one likes to play with the automated paper towel thing. And I had asked other people if, when they're in the restroom, if it just starts pulling, you know, it's one of those you wave your hand in front of,
sure,
and it releases some towels. And I had asked somebody, you know, some other people, I said, do the paper towels just turn, you know, start making paper towels by themselves when you're in there? And they're like, no.
So
anytime it happens to me, I'm like, well, this isn't the best place to say hi, but hi.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're at work having conversations with toilets. That's not a good thing.
I know. It's kind of the place you'd like a little privacy. But
yeah, that's not a good viewing angle for sure. So, wow.
But I do have a theory about spirits in bathrooms.
Oh, please.
And I don't know if I'm right or not.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
But I think spirits use moisture in the air to help manifest in the physical.
Hmm. Okay. That's an interesting thought.
I think running water is too much. Mm-hmm. You know, running water, I think you can cleanse them away with it because it's too much.
Okay.
But I think just ambient moisture in the air, and of course you have, you know, half a dozen or a dozen toilets in a room, you know, they all have that moisture releasing from the bowls at all times, creating a little bit more moist atmosphere, which I think, I'm not sure, but just a theory, that they might be able to use that to manifest in our reality a little bit more.
That's a cool idea. I mean, that's entirely possible. I guess it wouldn't surprise me a whole lot, but Yeah, I mean, that's as good a theory as any, and it does make sense. Something about bathrooms just seems to come up over and over and over in the paranormal.
I know. That's a weird place for it.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, everybody, I think it's time we got to take a break, so don't go away, and we'll be right back with more of the Paranormal Portal podcast in just a couple minutes. All right, everybody, and we're back, at it here on the Paranormal Portal podcast. Buckle up. We're going in.
Okay, let's see. The next experience that I can remember is probably 1986. And I was spending the weekend with some friends that had like 23 acres or so.
Okay.
In Georgia. So, you know, we go and, you know, sit around a bonfire at night and just enjoy each other's company and hang out. And the man that owned the property had told us, you know, hey, you want, it was midsummer. I remember it was midsummer. He says, hey, you want to see something? And we're like, yeah. You know, so he took us over to this certain patch where the wood started, because they had a lot of it bush hogged or whatever you call it, you know, where it was not lawn, but it wasn't foresty, but they did have forest as well. And from up there, it was like a little bit of a hill. So if you turned around from the, with your back to the forest line, you could see their house, and you could also see their neighbor's house, because the property was a little bit deep and to the right, and their neighbors were to the left. Mm-hmm. And it was already nightfall or around dusk, and when he took us there, there was this light. Yeah, it was more on the, it was duskish, but more on the darker side, and we could see this ring of light, almost like a donut of light in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And it was maybe a foot and a half, 2 feet off the ground, and maybe a couple of feet high, and maybe 4 feet diameter, somewhere around there.
Okay.
And, you know, we're looking at it, and it's like, what's that? And he's like, that's the fairies. It's like, what? And we kept, as we walked in, at first we were catching up to it,
mm-hmm.
but then it kept a certain distance and wouldn't let us get any closer. It, like, as we moved, it would move and keep the same distance.
Oh,
and then when we turned around, he's like, we better leave now or we might get lost in here. And he said, see, the houses are gone. And when you turn around and look, because we didn't go real deep,
mm-hmm.
but we went a little deep, but we should have still been able to see the houses and stuff. And then when we backtracked, we still couldn't see the houses. And we should have been able to see the houses, especially the neighbor one, because they had one of those floodlights in their yard.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up, you know, taking us out, and then it was like just boom, suddenly the houses were back. It wasn't like we were lost and then, oh, there it is. It was just boom, there they are. So I feel like we were in another dimension at that point, and his wife wasn't with us. She was back at the house making something to bring back outside for us to eat. She got angry with him for taking, you know, doing that with us. You know, you could have them lost. And police have been asking me, where did everybody go? What did I do with you guys? And
where was this?
Apparently knew. It was in Carrollton, Georgia.
Wow. Okay.
And I tried asking him, I was like, okay, is this something that's there all the time? Or is this something you stumbled on? Or is this something you created? You know, because he was a magical practitioner, and he'd never tell me.
Oh.
He would never tell me. So I don't have any of those answers, even though I'd love to know. It's like, okay, how did that, you know, was it there all the time? You know, is that something you could walk into at any time?
Well, sure.
You know, I didn't know.
That'd be nice to know, though. I mean, because I think that's, I love those kind of stories, because I think that all of our legends are built on some kind of truth. And there's some kind of truth mm-hmm. at the nugget, at the core of these things. And it'd be great to understand it a little more. Unfortunately, I think those people that know don't talk about it. Maybe that's just because it protects the phenomena. I don't know. But I find those stories absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. I love those kind of places. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'd love to check it out further. But, you know, that's been a long time ago.
Sure.
They didn't even own that property anymore. They ended up, you know, he and his wife ended up splitting up and going their own ways.
Oh, wow.
That sort of thing. So.
Huh.
Yeah.
That is really powerful, yeah. though. Very powerful.
Even more recently, I've contacted him and tried, okay, maybe all these years later, he'll tell me. Nope, he wouldn't tell me.
Well, that actually leads me to believe, though, that it is something of his doing. And not that he created the event, but maybe he created the conditions for that event to be, you know, more observable and through certain practices and such. But, you know, I know that true magical practitioners are, I mean, even illusionists don't tell you their secrets, and much more so mm-hmm. for actual, you know, real practitioners of magics. They don't generally open up, you know, their secrets to just anybody or anybody, you know, for that matter. So
mm-hmm.
That's really powerful, though. Very cool. I mean, at the very least, it's good to know. For me, it's good to know that stuff is out there. You know, even though I don't understand it, I don't really, you know, can't really conceptualize how those things happen. But I don't know. I find comfort in knowing that I live in a world where that mystery still exists.
Yeah, me too.
Mm.
Yeah, I love knowing that we live in a mysterious world where, you know, you might end up surprised by something, you know.
Well, I, you know, even in my own experience, I know I've seen a lot of things, and certainly you have seen just some amazing experience, amazing things. And I just think that to me is exciting. And that's why I'm on this journey into the paranormal, is because I love that there's still layers of this world that are full of mystery and discovery and phenomena that we just can't catalog and file away somewhere, that there's still so much to learn. And that to me is really mm-hmm. exciting.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Okay. Next, I'm long divorced from my other husband and
okay.
Got remarried. But this was probably around 1989. And my current husband's aunt and I got along really well. And we both love the paranormal. And
mm-hmm.
She somehow had obtained a spirit to hang out with her.
Oh.
And I thought that was so cool. So I wanted one. Like, who doesn't? You know?
It's like a puppy.
Hey, I want my own ghost, too. Yeah. The only difference is she could hear and understand hers half the time, where oh. I don't have that psychic ability.
Okay.
So I felt bad for mine, but I said, yeah, tell him I want. She says, yeah, he can send a friend over. I said, really? Yeah, send me, you know, I want one. And mine's name was Carl. And I guess because, you know, I couldn't hear him, you know, he'd be a little over dramatic with me sometimes. And he actually, while I was at work, he actually yelled in my ear, so I actually got to, you know, have that loud psychic hearing, you know, and I don't know that it's psychic, I think it was more his efforts than, you know, mine, because I was at work not even thinking about him.
Sure.
And I was working at a fast food place at the time, and he started throwing buns at me. And I was like, oh my God, if anybody turns around, they're going to see all these buns just flying in the air. Wonder what in the world is going on.
Uh-huh.
I was like, Carl, stop it. And get me in trouble, and I don't know why. I thought, I'm going to get in trouble.
Wow.
He did stop, and then sometimes when I'd be in the grocery store, he'd hit something off the shelf and it would land in my cart. And it'd be like, no, I don't want that, you know, and then it popped back in my cart again. And I've seen that video recently of that Asian woman, yes, and something falls off the shelf, and I was like, oh, yeah, you know, don't let that freak you out. Yeah. And I didn't know she was going to get possessed or something afterwards. Like, ooh, yeah. That poor woman, she had a bad experience from that where, oh, you know, mine was just, you know, happy-go-lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And twice he had apported necklaces at me.
Oh.
The first time, we were all, you know, I was at my husband's aunt's house. He was at work, and, you know, we were there with her two daughters and all sitting around in the living room watching TV, and suddenly out of nowhere, this necklace just falls right in my lap.
Oh, wow.
And it wasn't something that I would wear. It was not very pretty. It looked like a clamshell that was painted blue on some blue cord with beads.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But, yeah, definitely not my style, but it was like, this is amazing. That,
yeah.
And my friend has said, yeah, he's giving that to you. I was like, well, thank you. You know, of course, I never wore it. You know, like I said, it's not my style. I thought it was ugly, but, you know, I kept it, you know,
yeah,
for a long time as a keepsake. But I guess because I wasn't thrilled with that, there was another time I was in my truck by myself, and suddenly he apported a gold chain.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't even own a gold chain. So it was, you know, I didn't have money for gold. I get silver. And, yeah, it just, boom, you know, right there in my lap. And it's like, well, thank you. You know, I can get used to it at this point. You know.
Time to pay the rent, Carl. Wow.
And another thing he would do is when I was in my apartment by myself, he would sometimes, it would sound like somebody was urinating in the toilet. Suddenly water, you know, that watery sound.
Yeah.
And I even went in there to look, and I didn't see anything, but it was making the sound as if somebody were urinating in the toilet.
Oh, man.
I don't know if he would do that, just let me know. Yeah, yeah, I'm here, you know. Yeah. I don't know what it was.
Yeah. Just be sure to wash your hands. Wow.
But I think he finally ended up getting bored with me and left.
Oh, okay. So you just noticed it just kind of trickled off to nothing?
Yeah.
Oh. How long a period was it with you?
I feel his touch sometimes, though. Like on my hand, uh-huh. I feel like a little pressure sometimes, or spider webby.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've heard that sometimes.
While he was there, yeah. It'd be real subtle, but I would feel it sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I've heard if you feel that feeling of walking through cobwebs and feel that on your face and on your body, that it very well could be a spiritual presence, yeah.
Yeah, I'd feel that sort of thing every now and then. But, yeah, like I said, I think he got bored with me and, you know, finally left because, you know, I wasn't able to truly interact because,
sure,
you know, I didn't have a ghost box or anything yet at that point. And back in the 60s, I was introduced to EVPs and or how to get EVPs, but I never felt I had anything
mm-hmm.
at that point in time, so I didn't even, you know, attempt it.
Oh, okay.
Because back in the 60s when I was playing with the first, I had nothing, and then I got a better mic, and then I was like, well, this mic is so good. What if I'm hearing the neighbors? Maybe it's not really spiritual. Sure. Maybe it's,
yeah,
you know, somebody in the house next door. So, you know, I ended up kind of shelving that for a good many years.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. That is intense.
Well, at around 1990, I was working as security, and I was posted at a construction site where they were putting up new apartments, and it had been a forested area prior to that, so at night I would see, you know, like a little raccoon family, you know, walking around, and I'd feel so bad for them, you know, because it's like, oh, they're looking for their forest and their home, and it's all disappearing on them, you know.
Yeah.
That's great. But I would also see little tiny lights And they weren't fireflies. They were smaller than fireflies, and they were like a blue-white instead of a green, yellowish color. And they'd be flying all around, and I was like, you know, am I really seeing this, or is this my eyes doing something weird because I'm sitting in the dark?
Mm-hmm.
And I had asked some of the other security officers, I say, you guys ever see, you know, something weird at night? Ever see, like, little lights floating around or anything? And they're like, yeah.
Oh.
It's like, they're like, what is it? I was like, I'm not sure, but what I think it is was maybe the Fae that also occupied that forest.
Hmm. How did they take that? Or did you not have that discussion with them?
No, I didn't have a discussion. I just watch them, but,
sure.
You know, they'd just be... I kind of had the same feeling as I did with the raccoons, was, you know, their forest is gone. Maybe the way the flight was maybe a little confused looking or agitated looking even.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
It does.
But it was just, and they weren't there like the whole night. They'd end up, you know, going away, but it was like I don't know if there was a certain tree or plant or whatever in that area where we tended to sit because we could see most of the property from that one area, even though we, you know, go around, drive around or walk around
mm-hmm.
periodically, you know, to make sure that, you know, there's nobody out there stealing wood or something.
Sure.
But it was a good vantage point, you know, to pretty much see the whole place. So I don't know if there was maybe a tree or a shrub or something or other that may have been special to them that had been there but is now gone, and that's why they would go there. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's certainly, there's a lot of sacred areas all over the place, and if you listen to the First Nation stories that go way back, of course, they all the tribes had some sacred area that they would, you know, would be in their home territory. And I think that they were just so tuned in, of course, to the natural world around them that they knew where they were. But in our Western sensibilities, we never paid attention to that kind of stuff and have now developed all those sacred areas into condominiums and stuff, you know?
Yeah, I always complain about urban sprawl because it's like in Georgia, at least, where the city of Macon was, for instance, became abandoned. But they're all, you know, the whole town of Macon is sprawling out and, you know, tearing down forests and all, you know, to build new apartments. And I'm like, why don't you just pretty up downtown, you know, fix what needs fixing and keep, you know, people's apartments and stuff in town and leave the forest alone, you know?
Right, yeah.
That's my views on it, but
that's
what people do.
They're developing the beauty right out of these areas, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly.
Okay, let's see. Next, in about 1993, I was soaking in my tub and ended up with some spirit zipping in, scratching me on the shoulder, and I had thrown up a bubble of white light around myself immediately, and then it was gone.
Mm.
But that's something that's a little different and weird.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you know, at least you know how to, protect yourself, though. I think that that's a big thing, and I think, you know, a lot of people don't know that or aren't practiced in that, so I'm glad that you have those abilities, given how much paranormal you've been confronted with.
Yeah, I had practiced that so much that, you know, I kind of threw it up automatically. You know, it's almost like driving a car where, you know, you step on the brakes automatically when you see something you have to stop, you know, stop for without thinking about it, and that I've been practicing, you know, throwing up the white light around myself.
Oh, good.
For quite some time. So, yeah, when that happened, you know, it was just so automatic, you know, that I threw it up. But it's like, wow, that was interesting. And I was thinking maybe I threw up my light too fast because it's like, what was it? And, you know, what's going on?
Sure. Well, if it scratched you, I think that's a pretty good indicator whatever it is wasn't being real nice, you know. So.
And then, let's see, in 1994, I was working security at a closed down, a recently closed down candy factory.
Mm-hmm.
And the main part of the factory, they had turned the lights off. I don't know if they did it through the electrical company or just through their breaker box. They probably just did it through the breaker box, but I didn't even know where the breaker box was. But the main factory, the only part that had electricity was the little small office area up in the front, because they would have the lady that worked the office while it was open still coming in and dealing with paperwork and putting things in the computer. You know, she'd come by, you know, several times a week and, you know, be wrapping up her work, mm-hmm. you know, for the close down, I guess. And she was also doing stuff with getting, setting up for auctioneers to come in and, you know, fill up the equipment and that type of thing.
Yeah.
But in the main factory, there were no lights. And right around the corner, there was like a partition wall, and then you could walk, and let's see, there was the office, and if you were sitting at the desk, you're facing a bunch of big windows.
Mm-hmm.
And to the left, there was a wall, but the wall didn't go all the way to the windows. It was like maybe a 10 or 15 foot span of openness, and if you went around the corner, that was the lunchroom.
Okay.
So from sitting where at the desk where I was sitting to look out, I could also see the reflection of the lunchroom. And I found it really interesting that around 11:30, I would see in the window faint, it looked like people were in the lunchroom, you know, like faint reflection.
Uh-huh.
And I even, the first time I saw it, I even got up and went, what? You know, I walked around. It's like, is somebody in there? And no, nobody was in there. It was just, I think it was just from people doing that day in, day out for so many years. And as I understood, it was a good paying job. So a lot of their employees had been there a long time, you know, sure. wasn't a lot of turnover.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was just residual from the same people doing pretty much the same thing around the same time every day. When I'd walk through the factory every now and then, I'd feel like I needed to say excuse me to somebody too. I felt there like a presence at mm-hmm. certain of the machines.
Wow.
But that faded out probably in a few weeks. But yeah, it was really weird at first. And then another time while I was still there and making my rounds through the main part of the factory, I saw this big white cloud. And I was like, what in the world is that? You know, one of the machines on, is that steam? You know, is it powdered sugar somehow blown up in the air? You know, right. And as I got closer, there was nothing underneath it. And of course, there's no power in there anyway. And it was just a big ball of mist, and it wasn't like totally round. It was kind of tapered at the top and bottom somewhat,
mm-hmm.
but it was just there floating in the air, and I walked all around it, considered sticking my hand in it, and then I was like, well, if something happens to me by sticking my hand in here, I am all alone, and it will be all alone for hours. And the phone is like, you know, all the way back at the office, because we didn't have cell phones back then.
Sure.
And I was like, this may not be, you know, my best idea, so I'll just leave it alone. And I just looked at it, you know, and
right.
ended up, you know, just going, you know, finishing my rounds and going back, and I never saw it again. But some of the other security officers, they wouldn't get into details, but they would say that the place was haunted. One of them actually left mid-shift because of something he saw. He may have seen the same thing I saw. I don't know.
Wow.
And one of the employees, aside from that woman, there was a handyman that used to work there that would come in, and he was also moving things around, like to the auctioneers and stuff to come, you know.
Sure.
Moving things to, you know, from one area to another area type of thing. And he said that, yeah, the place is haunted. And he said the outside building, the warehouse, is what he called it, is so haunted that some of the guys refused to go in there.
Wow.
And it was always locked up to where I couldn't go in there, and I wanted to go in. Okay, what's in there that's scaring these people so bad, you know?
Sure.
But I never got to go in there. You know, they just kept that that area padlocked and didn't let the security people go in that part. But
well, given what you experienced in the areas you could go in, I imagine if there was enough to make them lock it, that other area must have been just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, the fellow that I talked to that worked there said that the guy that worked the boiler room had died, and he'd frequently still be seen in the boiler room still doing his job.
Isn't that something? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You got to wonder if that's a residual as well, or is that an active, intelligent haunt?
Yeah, I don't know, because I never saw that.
Right.
You know, I never saw that one.
Well, I got to tell you, we have had an excellent first part of this journey, but it's clear we're going to have you come back. I hope we can do that real soon, because this is absolutely fascinating, what you've been through, how much you remember, how much you've seen, and the variety of things is just incredible. So I just can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing your stories with us.
Oh, thank you, Brent. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and we'll get together and record the second part very soon, but thank you again. It's been absolutely incredible, and I'm really honored to have, to be the place where you're sharing this. Can you just take a minute, though, and let people know about your site that you're also operating?
Oh, yeah, thank you. I have a paranormal website that hexanparanormal.net, HAXAN paranormal.net. And I have things like podcasts and museums. I try to take a fun approach,
mm-hmm.
and I try to share helpful information on there as well. But, I see so many, serious websites out there, and I thought I'd do one that's a little more lighthearted and fun.
Mm-hmm. I can appreciate that.
Helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
And you've got a lot of great information there. And ladies and gentlemen, please check that out. And I'll be in touch, and we'll figure out when we're going to do part two, okay?
All right, sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on tonight's show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please feel free to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio, as well as finding us on Twitter. We're on Twitter at Paranormal Portal, P-O-R-T-L. And we'd love to have you stop by our YouTube page and subscribe and check out our shows there. We got hundreds of shows in our vault of journeys into the paranormal portal. So I hope you'll check it out, guys. We're over there at youtube.com/paranormalportal. So hope to see you guys soon. We'll be back, of course, for more podcasts in the coming days. So stay tuned. But we love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day and remember to laugh as much as you can. Take care, everybody.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.